Blog Talk Radio.
Song called Poets. My name is Gray Eyes Smith, and you are listening to Bad Company with Gray Eyes Smith. And we are presented by a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets. We have anthologies available on amazon.com under the same moniker, so feel free to check those out and help support these shows. That said, tonight's show is based on a contest that New Year Wild Dove and myself ran, called Your Favorite Poem of All Time. And I have the first link in the group, which has a SoundCloud. So I will play that.
Healing power of the drum. Your labored breathing called out to me, and in my soul, I knew what needed to be done.
Beautiful read, and such a touching poem. I mean, you know, the power of the drum resonance is, I believe, universal in its appeal. You know, the natives have drummed in their ceremonies for eons, and I thought she captured the beauty of that quite wonderfully in her poem. So just an excellent job on your poem and the healing power of the drum. All right. I'm going to grab the next poem. I'll post this to the group. Here we go. Check the studio real quick here. Oh, hello, Pam.
Hi, Gray. How's it going?
Hi. I'm good, thank you. And how are you?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you, maybe some other cool poets, and, you know, just delving into the poetry. Life is good.
Awesome.
Yeah, I can definitely think, if you don't mind me commenting on Lynn's poem. I had heard this one before. It's a beautiful reading. You know, just a beautiful write on the whole idea of how everything in the universe has a connection, and music is part of that connection. And the idea that music itself has a healing power. I really especially like gently tapping to the rhythm of our beating hearts, united as one in prayer, released to the universe. Beautiful lines there, and very well done.
That was a wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, would you mind reading the next one, please?
I would be happy to. All right. And this is... All right. Autumnal Sunset by Shadow Wraith. And it goes like this. Colorful spectrums, green through yellow, amber, red, serenely drifting into death, riding upon the wings of change, whirling, dancing pirouettes, spiraling onward into destruction, a rhythmic intoxication. Profound in the enveloping autumnal skies, leaves scattered ankle deep, cute signs of a season's last lament. Ramrod straight, its peak lost in its arc skyward, deep greens of every hue, paraded upon every needle, unfading scene of life in a forest of darkness. Faint diamante sparkles in each water-leaden cobweb, pale reflection on a soft pine carpet of virility, awaiting the arrival of winter, unshaken, unbowed, exquisitely alive in vibrant shades, waiting for the breath of the new season. A battle-tortured vista obscures the sun, hints of color, a tinge of red, harvest sun already bled, death of day, birth of night, autumnal sunset, lost in flight, and poem.
That was a beautiful read. And, I mean, that was a touching poem on the changing of the seasons from autumn to winter. I thought it had imagery that was fantastically painted with words and just a beautiful crafting of poetry. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. It definitely was a beautiful crafting of poetry. It had nice rhyme and flow to it. It had wonderful imagery. I liked the word choicing. I like how it brings us from the end of autumn to the beginning of winter. Almost as a symbolism. Well, you know, it can be definitely taken very literally, and probably is. It can also be a symbolism for the aging process and coming to the end of life. And I really like this all the way through, but I particularly am drawn to and relate to faint diamante sparkles in each water-leaden cobweb. Yeah, and I like that part because it reminds me of taking walks. I used to live near this river, and they're on the bridge, the spiders would spin their webs, and it would just sparkle in the sunlight, you know. And so it just, you know, is a really just beautiful and eye-catching imagery to me. And I like how this is, it has that touch of darkness to it that makes you think of the end of life. But it also exquisitely, you know, describes nature. So very well done.
Wonderful comment, Pam. Great. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to post the next poem here. And I will give this a read. This is by Robert Poleski, Rivera. Melancholy in the blue, morning at the beach, Trish Rivera. Missing you as the dawn raises, water turns to air as life turns to breath in a fierce embrace, urging matter upwards where the energy of the earth begins. Zinc and lead and chrome turn into the blue sea and sky, await the sun to purge a heart's broken darkness. The limitless horizons arch, disappears in space, burned spirit, skies changing hues, waves are sleepy in their liquid robes, seagulls arrow swiftly through the air, lonely frigate rests by the lighthouse, anglers on the shore catch the zephyr breeze, refreshing mists of salty droplets on their faces, as the homeward air spray paints Van Gogh's symphony of a lonely heart on a cerulean blue rim and pole. And he's got his author's notes. He says, it's a quote by Van Gogh, and it says, paintings have a life of their own that derives from their painter's soul. Absolutely. I agree with that comment. But, you know, he did a wonderful job of painting a very serene picture with his words. You know, you can feel this beauty as the fishermen feel the salty air on their, the salty droplets on their faces. As the homeward air spray paints Van Gogh's symphony of a lonely heart on the cerulean blue rim. Just fantastic, right? And what did you think, Kim?
Yeah, this is really beautiful. You know what I like about this is how he doesn't just describe the painting, but rather puts a story into the painting. Because it's interesting when you look at that, there's the whole canvas is filled, and there's not a lot of detail. It's the sand and the ocean and the sky all almost touching and blending together, and three small figures. And there is really a sense of loneliness in that painting, because the figures aren't together, that he captures really well in his first line. Missing you as the dawn rises, water turns to air, as life turns to breath in a fierce embrace. And I really like that, because to me it's the whole idea that as we grieve, we continue to have to live life, that life goes on. I also really like the description of refreshing mist of salty droplets on their faces, the homeward air spray paints Van Gogh's symphony. Wonderful, right, and very well done.
That was a great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I'm posting the next one, if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam.
I would be happy to. All right. All right. The Power of Words by Just Old Me. And it goes like this. Words are words until they're more, my mother said when I was young. Her mantras echoed in a war at recess when the nickname stung. But more means more than jabs below the belt with wicked knuckle tongues. The homeless rarely hear hello. A golden gift rests in our lungs. A word unseen can resonate, a guard against a festered wound. Yet clumsy words can complicate. A shift in meaning soon ballooned. In politics, small words hold weight, like north and south or left and right. Some stand on them to calibrate or march with them to rouse a fight. The Word became a mortal child a mere 2,000 years ago. His death across has reconciled our words and deeds portfolio. Words are words until they're more. I share today with my sweet boy. They bring us down or make us soar. So let's be those whose words bring joy. End poem.
Beautiful read, Cam. And he says in his author notes, in the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God. The Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. We have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. And he says, he says more in it, but I can't really follow it. Anyway, that was a wonderful write, you know, the subject of how words have such deep meaning and can be used as medicine or poison. And I thought he did a fabulous write on the power of words. They bring us down or make us soar. Be those words that bring joy. Wonderful, right? And great read, Pam. What did you think of the read, Pam, or the write, Pam?
Oh, I thought the write is absolutely amazing. I love the spiritual and element, the positive message in it, how it reminds us that we have the power in words that to as you were saying, you know, to do good or do bad. You know, I really like where he reminds us that he shares with us that his mother gave him this wisdom, words of wisdom, and he shares the same words of wisdom with his son. I particularly myself like the second and third stanza, you know, the idea of how we can, people use words to unfortunately elevate their own agenda, and also that, you know, we can easily misunderstand each other. You know, I think this is absolutely a wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to post the next poem here. And this is called When Age Talks by Diane D. And she has a SoundCloud.
When Age Talks by Diane D. Everyone owes death a life, and her debt was coming due. Wilting and leaden, she shuffled ploddingly across the maroon shag rug, plopped down onto the ruddy cafe corduroy couch. A double dumpling figure bent with age. I studied her time-chipped, weather-stricken face, a road map to her gaudy past. Skin was like used tea leaves, nearly fossiled. It was so dry, smelling of Chantilly lace and mothballs. Her once blue eyes are blood speckled and flitting side to side, wizened, shrunken, like a fading white rose. Rheumatic and crookedly framed fingers combing her thinning gunmetal hair. Well-groomed, salt-and-pepper brows raised playfully when she lilted cackles of an old ditty. Prune juice was surely a staple of her diet. Her bones scoffed at the grinding noises, showing she lives in the winters of life. She was once a lover, wife, mother, grandmother, friend, teacher, cook, cleaner. She was an enterprise by herself. Every wrinkle tells a story of struggles and survivals. Yes, everyone owes death a life. And poem.
Oh, that was beautiful. I thought it had it was a wonderful rendition of a beautifully crafted rendition of life coming to an end, and the life that was lived before. You know, she paints a picture of this woman and her life as it is and as it was, as a mother, wife, mother, lover, grandmother, friend, teacher, cook, cleaner. She was an enterprise by herself. Each wrinkle tells a story of struggles and survivals. Yes, everyone owes death a life. Just a beautifully crafted piece of artwork there. And what did you think, Sam?
Yeah, this is definitely beautifully crafted. I'm always impressed with Diane Dee's ability to use imagery. I like how she brings us into the physical description of this elderly woman. Her surroundings, to plop down onto the ruddy corduroy couch, a double dumpling figure. I studied her chipped, weather-stricken face. I like how it gets the part where it describes where it says her skin like used tea leaves, and then in her hair combed her thinning gunmetal gray hair. I thought gunmetal really made it stand out. But what I like is that she transitions from not only observing the physical attributes of this elderly woman, but in that end stanza wraps up so nicely with once a lover, wife, mother, grandmother, friend, teacher, cook, cleaner. She was an enterprise by herself. Each wrinkle tells a story of struggle and survival. And so we get to see that behind this wrinkled skin, behind this thinning hair, behind this shuffle is a woman who was so much more than she's seen as in the moment. You know, so beautifully written and very well done.
Wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next write-up. This is called The Murder of Crows by Ken Dahl. It was on a dark, moonless night in that late September cold. The small, sleepy town had been shaken awake, driven by fear as the story of a local serial killer was unfolding. Rumors had been spreading that this horror story had started a few years prior with the discovery of the first body. The town sheriff, in fear of public panic in his election year, decided to never release the story. From the river's edge on the outskirts of town, a fisherman had discovered the first body tripping over the shallow grave. Later, investigation saved from the public would reveal the cause of death was a single gunshot to the head with a high caliber rifle. This would later lead to a series of murders, leaving local law enforcement stumped with no clues or leads to follow. To that night, in late September's cold, after a time of killing, the two murderous brothers working together had become increasingly bold. Their latest victim, a real estate agent that had been missing for 2 weeks, last seen at an open house listing. Now, fast forward to the present moment, the oldest brother comes running from around the corner. "What the heck are you doing shooting at those birds? You're going to attack attention." "I can't help it. They just keep staring at me. Look at those birds. They've been mocking me," it's Johnny. Johnny replies, "Well, you killed one, you happy. Now let me get the rest of these bags in the back of the truck so we can finish covering his body." Confidently working up an appetite to their long night, the two brothers stopped at a local diner, waiting on the landfill's later opening. When they walked into the diner, dozens and dozens of black ravenous crows came from every direction as soon as they stepped into the restaurant's covering. Beaks tearing, ripping, and slashing the bags open from the back of the truck, spreading personal effects and real estate flyers, sticking to the ground frozen cold. Just then, the sheriff's deputies were meeting for breakfast as this horror story was coming to a close. Everyone watching the murder of Rose and Boom. I liked it. I mean, that was dark and kind of twisted, but it was great. I mean, he did an excellent job with his storyline. And, you know, it has an incredible, engaging storyline, very visceral as well. You can feel the horror of the town as they realize that there's a serial killer at least within their streets. So just a wonderful poem on the darkness of a serial killer and the murder of crows that brought them to an end. Excellent, right, Ken? And Pam, what are your thoughts?
Well, I tell you, so far tonight, and I don't doubt that it will continue, we are definitely getting some top-notch poetry. This one is no exception. It's wonderful story style. I like how, you know, it takes us into, you know, the small town where, you know, the murders, and it's just right up my alley as far as, like, I like to watch shows like the CSI shows, and used to love to watch Criminal Minds, and you know, I thought you did a wonderful read of that, Gray. And I really liked this all the way through. As I said, it's wonderful storytelling. But I think for me, he really wrapped it up nicely at those last couple of stanzas. And so very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I've got the next poem up, Pam, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. All right. And just waiting for it to open. All right. And Cartography of Lost Desire. And it goes like this. By John Nakapalo. And it goes like this. I have tried to forget the contours of your body, the places where sweat would pool salty dewing on soft cinnamon arch, points that were landmarks of shared pleasure, kisses like ports of calls. It is this tactile map that haunts my night, years of distance that have been ashen and erosive, folded into memory that longs only for your compass touch. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And, you know, I've commented on this three times. And in my first comment, I said, John, this is a legend to the map of love and desire. Then I said, passionate and exotic, a compass of desire. And then kisses like court call resonates deeply and inspire. So just a fantastic subject. I mean, right on the subject of the lover that he has no longer, but longs for that compass touch to the body. And so I thought it was just a brilliant poem on that. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, you know, I really like this, how he, I see that it was originally written 3 years back for a Pablo Neruda contest, and I can definitely see the Neruda inspiration, how he brings in the emotion of nostalgia, of sadness, along with the sensuality. It's beautiful. It is haunting. I like how it's about looking back and remembering the touch or at touching. And I really like kisses like ports of call. It is this tactile map that haunts my nights, years of distance. And then I like how he ends with that longs only for your compass touch. It's the whole idea to me of feeling lost without somebody. So beautifully written and very well done.
That was a great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and this is called The Life by Kaiku. Lost theories of underpaintings, splashing sorrows to stumbling ire, smudging fears to blinding joys, blending joys. I found myself brushing upon what I thought well complete, guessing white, beginning again with hands smeared paint across the vastness of yesterday's. My capricious fingerprints dancing on the canvas of today. Perhaps it is how our moments of ebony and ivory transcends the 88 color palette, composing a time capsule for the heart, a duet for one, a forgotten soliloquy playing in repose to a quiet room, not understanding our place until placed into memories. End poem. And that was beautiful. I mean, you know, you can feel the love and the desire in this poem. And perhaps it is love, our moments of ebony and ivory, transcends the 88 color palette, composing a time capsule for the heart, a duet for one, a forgotten soliloquy playing in repose to a quiet room, not understanding our place until placed into melodies. And just a wonderful poem with a beautiful picture as well. So just a great job, Tycoon. Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was a beautiful write with a wonderful imagery. I like how she titles it Still Life, because with still life being a type of art, I don't think that painting counts as a still life painting, but I like how the title reflects the idea of taking time to be still, to just take everything in. I like how, this is another one that has a beautiful nostalgic feel. I did also really like that. Perhaps it's how our moments of ebony and ivory transcend the 88 color palette, composing a time capsule for the heart, a duet for one. And that makes me think of somebody, looking at old black and white photographs of perhaps their childhood or something, and just the memories coming back of a close friendship. You know, I just thought this was beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. Okay, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please, Pam.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. All right. And, oh, I just realized something. She says, our ebony and ivory 88 color palette. Isn't there 88 keys on a piano? I think that might actually be, sorry to jump back to the previous poem, but it just suddenly clicked in my head, and I could be wrong, but the mention of ebony and ivory and the mention of the number 88, I believe that's a reference to playing piano music. At least it could be.
It is, yes. I just Googled it.
Okay. Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah,
all
absolutely.
Right. What do you see there, Gray? We put our heads together, and we get a full brain.
Absolutely. I'd like to welcome another caller on before you read, Pam.
Okay.
Hello, area code 503. Who's calling, please?
Hello, this is Emmy or Emily Anya.
Hi, Emmy. Glad you could be here.
Yeah,
hi, Emmy.
It's always nice being here. Thank you guys for your feedback on my poem yesterday.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we were happy to comment on your poem.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And did you get a chance to hear the last poem that was read?
No, I don't think I have.
Okay, no problem. Okay, Pam, whenever you're ready.
All right. This is The Song of the Sea by Karuna K. And it goes like this. Seagulls soar in skies above as my bare feet leave prints on sun-warm gold sand, while blue waves crest high and crash down on the shore. In their wake are the seashells that echo the rhythm of the sea. I watch as my footprints vanish, while over them wash the waves, gone in no time as the transient mark, leaving behind countless grains of sand, the song of the sea and the shells, an infinite ocean as it meets endless sky. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam. And what a descriptive piece. I mean, you know, you can feel every bit of her poetry as you read it. And I enjoyed it a lot. You know, it has a definite beauty and attraction to it, as does the seashore. And I thought you captured the seashore beautifully. And what are your thoughts, Emmy?
Sorry, I'm still reading it. I thought it had great imagery, though. Definitely quite a few details here from the ocean. And yeah, it's definitely a nice little poem. But, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. And Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like this. I remember reading somewhere before that I think I don't know what number they're in, but they're like, there's top subjects that poets write about, and the ocean is one of the top five, which I completely can understand, because there is something profoundly beautiful and powerful about the movement of water. And I feel like this is someone who must have at least once or more in their life seen the ocean, because they so perfectly describe it. And I really like how it's not only about the sight, but about the sounds, that echo the rhythm of the sea. This is just amazing use of imagery. It's beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, Emmy, I've got the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind reading that, please. It's called Ages by Charlie's Waiting.
Yeah, sure. So this is Ages by Charlie's Waiting. It's been 1,000 ages since I've heard the turtle doves sing or waited for the warmer weather that they say they seem to bring, or sat upon a chiseled portico to hear the rain drip upon the sill and run away in ebbs and swirls to all those waterways they fill. Shadows loom where once I sat and ivy hugs the mason stone. It's been 1,000 ages since the sounds of home were known. So I shall sit at this window ledge and listen for the doves to arrive. And if it rains, I'll enjoy the patter much like I did when I was alive. End poem.
Wow, that was a haunting ending. I mean, you know, you're picturing somebody who's alive and well listening to the sound of rain. And, it's been 1,000 ages since I heard the turtle doves sing or waited for the warmer weather that they say they seem to bring. And then, you know, he sits and listens to the rain as it ebbs and swirls to all those waterways they fill. And then, you know, at the end, it's where it's haunting. And if it rains, I'll enjoy the patter, much like I did when I was alive. So, I mean, that must be a ghost, and that's very haunting. Excellent write and fabulous read, Emmy. And, Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this was a wonderfully crafted ghost story. I like how, you know, there were those little hints that we were dealing, with a ghost, but they were so subtly woven in. Like, it's been 1,000 ages, shadows loom where once I sat, you know, like, but it doesn't register right away until you get to that end, you know, and it, you know, where it says, you know, well, much like I did when I was alive. So, you know, it's beautifully written. It's I like a good ghost story that depends more on, you know, I mean, there's definitely nothing wrong with a good gory story. You know, I like those too. But sometimes it's nice to read something to to where it's dark, but it depends more on creating an atmosphere. And I really like this all the way through, but especially Shadow Room, where once I sat and Ivy hugs the Mason Stone, it's been 1,000 ages since the sounds of home were known. You can just really feel the loneliness there. Beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Emmy, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought, like, especially with the first stanza, the rhyme and the rhythm, there's some moments in poetry where I am reading something, and if I just read each word in its order, it sort of flows into itself, and I thought that was incredibly well done with the first stanza. It really helped guide me, I guess you could say. As far as the imagery here, I think it's actually quite strong. I'll enjoy the patter much like I did when I was alive. Patter being a very common, like, verb that's sort of tied to rain and stuff, so that's not out of the ordinary, but definitely took a haunting twist too, which I agree with what the rest of what you said. So yeah,
great comment, Emmy. Thank you. Okay, so this next poem is explicit. So if you don't like explicit language, please tune out. Okay, this is called F to Rock. I am king, I rule the world. Some people call me God. Wherever I roam, I am heard. I do whatever the F I want. I fell in love with a woman and her sister too. At this time in my life, there's just something I got to do. I'll love them like no other man. I want to lick them into heaven. Can you wrap them up for me? They're perfect for my harem. I am king, so I will choose. I've got the power. I get to rule. To qualify, you must love sex. Seize the day. No time to rest. Get down on, like the birds in the nest. Get down on. You're my fetish. Or get on down. Spread those legs. Get on down. Damn, I'm blessed. Get on down. Show me your love. Get on down. It's time to start. Get on down. We shouldn't part. Come on. Now, let's F to rock. I knew the day I met you first. You've learned your lessons well. Your smile and laugh reveal so much. So quickly, I can tell. I need you near. I want you bad. I see we were meant to be. With you around, I won't be sad. I'm full of love. You'll see. And then it goes to the chorus. Get on down like birds in the nest. Get on down. You're my fetish. Get on down. Spread those legs. Get on down. Damn, I'm blessed. Get on down. Show me your love. Get on down. It's time to start. Get on down. We shouldn't part. Come on now. Let's F to rock. And then I can't wait till we begin. She often likes to bring a friend. With the right two, three in a crowd. So women can't be wrong. So many women can't be wrong. Hi there, doll. How have you been? How was that shoot for the magazine? Come to me. Take off that dress. You'll come back because you like the best. Should we pick up where we've left off? I felt so good we couldn't stop. Raw, hot sex straight from the heart. Get off the bed. It's time to start. Up against the wall and on the floor, in the shower and on the lawn. Body slides, messes. Massage oil, sex toys from the catalog. Get on down like birds in the nest. Get on down. You're my fetish. Get on down. Spread those legs. Get on down. Damn, I'm blessed. Get on down. Show me your love. Get on down. It's time to start. Get on down. You shouldn't part. Come on now. Let's F to rock. I fell in love with this woman and my harem too. But at this time in my life, they're what I want to do. And home. And in his author's notes, he says, featured in my book, Schizophrenic Poets, Poetics, 2017, and it's inspired by Red Hot Chili Peppers' classic track, Sir Psycho Sexy, off my all-time favorite album, Blood Sugar Sex and Magic, essentially, it's a happy ode, which finds the lead character, sort of psycho-sexy, somewhat older and pondering marriage and poem, or end comment. And, I mean, it was definitely explicit, but in the style of the Chili Peppers, I think it totally captured the essence of the Chili Peppers in its rights. So, great job. And he's got 169 likes on it. So, it's a well-received poem. And Pam, what are your thoughts?
Well, before I comment, I did want to mention that Bobby has joined us. I went ahead
Bobby.
And brought her on.
Good evening.
Hi, Bobby.
Hey, Bobby.
Hello.
Glad you could be here. Well, you know, I do like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and this definitely fit the vibe of that particular song. You know, I think, geez, I don't know. Well, you know, there's a whole lot of getting down and getting up and all that. So, geez, I just don't really know what to say. Sorry, Gray, you did a wonderful read of that.
Okay, thank you, Pam. And Emmy, what are your thoughts?
Oh, Emmy had to go.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Bobby, did you get a chance to hear the poem?
Oh, I'm not really, no.
Oh, okay. Okie dokie. Thank you for calling in. All right, I'm going to post the next poem here. And this one has a SoundCloud. This is called Paper House by Just Poppy. And I will play the SoundCloud.
Paper House. I sketch a place of refuge using paper and pen, then fall asleep, allowing a new reality to begin. An idyllic house unfolds in a cardboard landscape. Here, all broken promises can be mended with tape. I have no more worries. I have no more fears. Insulting remarks don't reach my ears. My roommate is tranquility, and she brings me peace. But anxiety and despair are not given a lease. Clouds never weep, and the sun always smiles. The lawn is covered with flowers for miles and miles. This is where I want to stay and never leave. But I know I can't. I'm not that naive. Eventually, everything begins to fade away, and I find myself back in the present day. A world filled with so much misery and sorrow. So I will draw another paper house tomorrow.
Beautiful read and an excellent write. It says in its author's notes, inspired by the movie Paper House, this dark psychological drama follows young Anna Madden, Charlotte Burke, a lonely British child who begins to inhabit a world that she draws in her sketchbook. It is a great movie you probably have never seen. And I can't say I have, but I mean, she captured the essence of it quite beautifully. You know, the escapism that we all need is found in the drawing of this paper house. And I thought it was just a beautiful crafting of art. And what did you think, Pam? Hello, Pam?
Okay, sorry. Sorry, I muted myself for the reading.
That's okay.
And but yeah, no, I thought it was absolutely beautiful. I love her reading voice. I thought that was wonderful. I like the use of imagery. I like, as you said, how it kind of brings us back into childhood. I have no more worries, I have no more fears, insulting remarks don't reach my ears. My roommate is tranquility and she brings me peace, but anxiety and despair are not a given a lease. You know, I think that this has a particularly deep message in that it deals with the aftermath of childhood trauma, such as bullying and abuse, and how it follows us into adulthood, and how oftentimes we need to find that safe place to bring ourselves into. So beautifully written and very well done.
A wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
Is the place where we very often need to bring ourselves into, especially in childhood. They're so fragile. I the first stanza just really grabbed me. I sketch a place of refuge using paper and pen, and then fall asleep, allowing a new reality to begin. Idyllic house unfolds on a cardboard landscape. Here, all broken promises can be mended with tape. The childlike innocence of that is just so moving, and it's melancholy, and it speaks of the innocence of a child and how they can believe that things can be better.
Yeah, absolutely. Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. Okay, Bobby, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Not at all. And we have Driving West Texas, okay, by Oak Blue, 34. West Texas floats through my windshield. An old barn, now sunken on one side, goats grazing in a field taken over by cactus, a lonely windmill pumping water for cows unseen, a deserted gas station in a now penniless town, a distant hilltop nested with wind turbines, a deep blue sky dotted with cloud wisps, huge ghost trucks passing in a whoosh, a vigilant hawk sitting on a telephone pole, a dash of wildflowers welcoming spring, mile after mile, Austin to Abilene to Amarillo, barely obeying the 75-mile-per-hour speed limit, listening to old country, Hank, Willie, George, waiting for a town big enough to still have a gas station, a bag of chips, a can of Coke, and back on the road, driving under a Texas sky. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And then his author's notes, he says, the poem has a truth and tells the story of what's happening in rural Texas as it's happening in so many rural areas in the U.S. And it was in a contest called Country Life. And I thought he did a beautiful job capturing what is happening, you know, the desolation and the isolation of these smaller communities being isolated and desolated more as time goes on. So just a wonderful poem with excellent imagery, and you can feel the tragedy and the loss in the poem where he says windmills pumping water for cows that don't exist, and by cows unseen, and you know, a deserted gas station is now in a penniless town, a distant hilltop nested with wind turbines, a deep blue sky dotted with cloud wisps, huge ghost trucks passing in a whoosh, a vigilant hawk sitting on a telephone pole, a dash of wildflowers welcoming spring. It's excellent imagery, and you can feel the tragedy of the loss of this type of life. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. It's an excellent write with strong imagery. There is that kind of, that sense of sadness of a world that's becoming lost in that second stanza, which I really liked the leaning of that stanza. The first stanza, the first couple lines, I like how he says West Texas floats through my windshield. It gives an idea of kind of like as if you're in the the summer months where the air becomes so hot that you can like see it. It has that mirage type look to it. I also really like how he brings in the music. So, you know, it's not just about what he sees, but to me, the music, the listening to that, is such an important part of any road trip that it really brings personality into the rite. So wonderful rite and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And Bobby, what did you think of the poem that you read?
I really enjoyed this. Wonderful visual imagery. It reminds me of a conversation I had with a friend of mine who grew up in Arizona. And he would tell me about going out and finding ghost towns and just going exploring. And he told me, I said, well, where did you grow up? He goes, it doesn't matter. It doesn't exist anymore. And
right.
I was blown away. He said, yeah. He said, the town just doesn't exist anymore. And if you look at photographs of the old traditional Route 66, you see so much of that. Abandoned gas stations and abandoned motor court inns and things of that nature. It's just amazing how how the country has changed. First driving changed it, and then the highway system, and then changing the highway system just completely changed it, and these little towns that sprung up along 66 just went away. So you can see this in his writing, just the desolation and the loneliness. I remember the one time I was driving across Texas, I saw this huge boulder off in the distance. 3 hours later, I was still looking at this huge boulder off the distance. And you get that feeling from his writing. So this is beautifully done.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. Okay, Pam, I have the next poem up if you wouldn't mind, please.
I would be happy to. All right. This is Walking to Consalia from Withers, A Meditation on Memory, Holding My Nana's Hand by Stephen Vistentainer, and it goes like this. The haze of a vintage 70s photograph, flat colors and muted tones, only 4 blocks along the Brooklyn sidewalk cracks. I reached the iron handrail, choosy coming down the stoop. There was always wrought iron spikes painted over 5 times black, now down the street holding the centrist hand on the side of the warehouse clack. The blocks back then sang Italian dialects, Chinese sumac, tenements, static brick, sublime, and shoe tossing on power lines. The chorus fires, bruised trucks, the hull and bumps of the city bus, all common sparrows and plumaged purple, green, iridescent yellow-beaked starlings like us took in the exhaust deluxe. Pressed architecture, her old valley never bore, panoramic mortar and slabs swabbed for fields of space, cool air, and the mountains I'd come later in life to dream to be reborn in. In a city of scars, her hand in my hand was a grandmother's covenant, a palm and hold that kicked back from whittling with scissors, drawing a pattern or cutting fabric, but became on these walks an appendage document for safety, for love. Then the let go of skin to stroll ahead, to pass the passerby, bubble gum on the concrete, a touch of linden, Norway, maple, black locust, that was given a 4x4 space to breathe by the city with a bark-stained pissed. The scoop by her to lovingly reach again, to cross the streets to bring me back to mama, and a just rising father resting from a night of working ovens and shaping dough. No longer choosy, I grasped the smooth rail on the stoop with the spiral scroll balusters and climb to the entrance of home. My thirst for love quenched. Withers. Oh, I guess that's a note. Okay, end poem.
Beautiful recap. And in his author's notes, he says, the photo that inspired the work was a 1974 Brooklyn, New York, Williamsburg, Nona and I. And so it's just a wonderful storyline on, you know, the subject of the role of a grandmother in this child's life. And the let go of her of skin to scroll ahead past the passerby, bubblegum on the concrete, a touch of linden, Norway maple, black locust that was given a 4x4 space to breathe in the city with a bark stained. This, I mean, you can picture this tree being pissed on over the years and the staining that would occur. It was a wonderful descriptive, right, you know, taking you through a day in the life of this child with his grandmother walking through the inner city streets. Just a beautiful poem. Wonderful remembrance as well. And I really liked it. What did you think, Pam?
I have to agree. First of all, that picture, that you can see the love of the grandmother, the pride, you know, the joy and enthusiasm of the child. So that's just a wonderful picture. I like how this is a tribute to his grandmother. And I really like the imagery, and especially with that stanza that has the blocks back then saying Italian dialect, Chinese sumac tenements, dead bricks sublime, and shoe tossing on power lines. It really brings us into the city. I also really like where he mentions that in Obsidian of Scars, her hand in my hand was a grandmother's covenant. You know, there's something about a childhood where when you have someone who helps you feel loved and protected, it makes me think about when my niece was young, and she's like 27 or 28 now. She's, you know, but when she was a toddler, we would go for walks together, and she would always tell me before we crossed the road, I didn't even have to say it to her, she would say, hold my hand, Aunt Pam, because if you're holding me, I won't get hit by a car. And there's just something, you know, wonderful about the trust of a child. You know, absolutely an amazing write and very well done.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Pam. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
This was the time machine for me. If you change Italian to Polish and change New York to Chicago, this was me. I changed the 70s to the 50s, of course. But her hand in my hand was a grandmother's covenant. What a beautiful line. And it just reached back into my past. I remember when my grandmother and I would go, we would go on the elevated to downtown Chicago and go shopping and have lunch at Carson Peary's and Marshall Fields. And I remember we'd cross the street. I'd always hold her hand. She'd always, we'd go someplace, I'd hold her hand. And it was just, this reads like my childhood. And this is what I do with my grandmother. And we get back home with the entrance, and except that my grandfather was no longer alive, but it just, the whole thing, it resonates. If you had a childhood like this, it just rich with the memories of being loved and being guided and having an idyllic childhood. This is such a wonderfully rich and nostalgic piece of writing.
Absolutely, great comment. Thank you, Bobby. Okay, so I've got the next poem up, and this is by EJ Cool, and she has a SoundCloud, so we'll play that.
Gray Matter, White Matter by EJ Cool. Wadded lumps of unidentifiable gastropod protein clumps ambiguous grafted ambition stuffs and swells mass-produced synthetic shells. Bland styrofoam filler chunks plumb the silent majority sump pump. Defunct cerebral and phalanx cells launch stroma stimuli to organelles. Vacuum-sealed nutrition disfigured, mechanically delivered. Efficients shoved and dropped through decontamination chamber airlocked mail slots. Chemical slither fogs freshly cracked vandalized glass in wisps slivered. Sloth-toed creations race in desperation against clocks and fat cat rat flocks. Live to die another day in monotone malaise and chromite haze. Grandstanding lunatic regimes, sacrificial bloody soapbox pipe dream screams. Litigated ligatures, sloppy sutures, publicly displayed flays. Titanium appendages dissect split spleens and inspect gray matter reams. Implicit organ extrication, augmented supplementation, bubbling biological warfare, virulent contagion extraordinaire, test tube insemination, fallacious data extrapolation, surrogate broodmare air, colloquial ovarian fibroid thoroughfare, germination impotence, instant termination of clone imprints, boiled tedium inundation, Erlenmeyer titration calculation, cartilage deposits on broken beaker bits, botched logic script splints, mammal arachnid derivation, aborted fetus fertilization, dystopian transubstantiation, rectovaginal ulceration, athanasia served on silver sieve, salvation through exhumed carcass unlive, gyrus pulverization, malfunctional system restoration, marrow myeloma monolith, Constantinian collaborative.
Wow. What a definitely metaphorically rich poem. It really resonates scientifically with me. You know, she captures so many scientific elements of her right, and you know, it definitely carries a warning in it that you know, are going to be a blight on mankind. And I thought it was a fascinating poem, very, very astute and in depth. Absolutely. And Pam, are you back? Bobby, what did you think?
This is so very EJ cool. You get into the polysyllabic terminology, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's EJ. And she does it with such agility and panache. I mean, and it flows. It's like this tongue twister supreme. And if you can get through this, like, you're probably not familiar with this. It's the song "The Modern Major General" from Gilbert and Sullivan, HMS Pinafore. I think if you sang this, this is what it would sound like. It is just such a tongue twister, but it is just so threaded with the scientific terminology. I mean, my gosh, I have to wonder what kind of research she did when she was writing this. It was very, very dystopian, very technically dense piece. I mean, you could sit there and just pick out term after term that you could just you'd steep yourself in, and it just goes on and on. It is this amazingly intimidating compilation of scientific terminology, but it's so skillfully done.
Absolutely, great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Pam, would you like to make a comment on EJ's poem?
Yes, I'm always impressed with her use of language and imagery, of wonderful alliteration. I like how this takes us into a world of false, you know, a world nothing is natural anymore. It's all about the test tubes and the trans. I like the phrase dystopian transubstantiation. And there's this whole, I think, idea of the kind of like the loss of humanity. Powerful and visceral and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I've got the next poem up. This is by Sonia 3902Z. It's called Pulse of Saturday Night. Memories of the old dance hall are sealed in the mind of a middle-aged bopper who remembers the magic of Saturday night many years ago when her date appeared before the door, whistling the latest tune while combing his slick hair, looking handsome in his plaid jacket and freshly polished white butts. The ragtop Chevy had a Saturday night shine with loud music playing from its AM radio while both sat together, his arm around her ponytailed shoulder. They laughed in love as he peeled rubber at the traffic light, rushing to meet the gang at Wally's drive-in for burgers and shakes, and then on their way to a night of bebop alupa. Boarded windows, faded paint, a fallen sign, and unmowed grass are yesterday's memory of a time when going steady and exchanging rings were the favorite things to do. She stops and stares at the old dance hall, recapturing the pulse of Saturday night's blueberry feelings to her well-seasoned heart and palm. And it's based on a blueberry, on Fats Domino's Blueberry Hill era. And I thought it was beautifully expressed. I mean, you know, I often believe that I should have been born in the 50s because I was a greaser at heart. And I could picture myself slicking back my hair as I went to pick up my date while singing, humming the latest tune. And I really liked it. It was beautiful of them and a fantastic poem. So what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this was very enjoyable. I love the nostalgia in it, how she goes into detail whistling the latest tune while combing his slick hair, looking handsome in his plaid jacket. I even like how she goes into the description of the cars, you know, and the dances and, you know, the idea of the young people getting together for the burgers and shakes. And, you know, it's all just really, really fun. It takes us back to a time that seems so lighthearted and carefree, just a wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
As Pam said, it's a wonderfully nostalgic piece. It really captures the flavor of the post-World War II 50s time of innocence, when the world was back together and things were good, and you know, and could go out and get a burger and a shake and then go cruising the main street and waving at your friends, and everybody knew everybody else, and it is a very very beautifully crafted piece. It's almost like it's a snapshot in time. It's like a scrapbook that they've collected all of these wonderful memories together. Her ponytail, he sat close together with his arm around her ponytailed shoulder. They laughed in love as he peeled rubber at the traffic light, rushing to meet the gang at Wally's. Beautifully, beautifully said, beautifully nostalgic, and great visual imagery. Paints a beautiful picture.
Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. Okay, Bobby, I have the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Not at all. Okay. And we have, oh, that's mine. Yeah, well, you put favorite out there, and I couldn't honestly take anything that I had written and put it up there. I just didn't think that was right. So I went to someone more recognized, and this was by William Butler Yeats, and it speaks of childhood and childhood lost. It's called The Stolen Child. Where dips the rocky highland of Slough Wood in the lake, there lies a leafy island where flapping herons wake. The drowsy water rats, there we've hid our fairy vats full of berries and of reddest stolen cherries. Come away, O human child, to the waters and wild with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. Where the wave of moonlight glosses the dim gray sands with light. Far off, by furthest rosses, we foot it all the night, weaving olden dances, mingling hands, and mingling glances, till the moon has taken flight. To and fro we leap and chase the frothy bubbles, while the world is full of troubles and is anxious in its sleep. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. The wandering water gushes from the hills of Glen Car in pools among the rushes that scar could bathe a star, that scarce could bathe a star. We seek for slumbering trout and whispering in their ears, give them unquiet dreams, leaning softly out from ferns that drop their tears over the young streams. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than you can understand. Away with us he's going, the solemn-eyed. He'll hear no more the lowing of the calves on the warm hillside, or the kettle on the hob singing peace into his breast, or see the brown mice bob round and round the oatmeal chest. For he comes, the human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, from a world more full of weeping than he can understand. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And in its author's notes, it says, there is a little point of rocks where if anyone should fall asleep, there is a danger of them waking. Silly. The fairies have carried off their souls. End comment. And so that was a fascinating write. I mean, you can picture all this as you read it. With the dips, the rocky highland of wood in the lake, there lies a leafy island. And where the flapping herons wake, the drowsy water rats, where we've hid our fairy vats full of berries and of the reddest stolen cherries. And then come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with the fairy hand in hand. I mean, they're taking him away from this world of tears and taking him to a place where there's waters are wild. And so I thought it was a wonderful telling on the subject of fairies and their ability to take other people, take humans into their world. And I liked it. I liked it a lot. What did you think, Kim? Excellent read,
Bobby.
Yeah,
well, yes, I have to agree. This was a wonderful read of The Stolen Child by William Butler Yeats. Great choice. You know, as far as classic poetry goes, he definitely is one of the all-time best. You know, I like how he takes us into a world of magic. You know, and I like how this is, you know, about the idea of the changeling, the child, that human child being stolen away and replaced by a changeling. So wonderful look at, you know, the Irish myths, and beautifully written and very well done. I mean, not that William Butler Yeats cares too much what I have to say about his poem, but there you go.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And
oh, because
Bobby,
he wants to stand back. I always love this one. I like the magic of it. I like the fact that, like Pam says, that it takes you into a fairyland, which is why that I based my piece, The Child Beguiled, The Child Beguiled is based on this poem. And like my last stanza, similar to Yeats's, my last stanza, he dwells now amid hollows and moss-covered stone. He is of the fairy folk now, of the waters and the wild. The fairies have taken them into their own, and he bears no more human, now the child beguiled. And the fairies have taken the human child beguiled him away, and I will never know of sorrow because he now lives with the fairies. And it has such a magical quality to it, and especially when he speaks of the magic in nature and how the fairies live among this magic. To me, I've always been captured by the word picture that he paints.
Absolutely. Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. And I'd like to welcome caller area code 614 to the show. Who's calling, please?
Hey, this is the writer C, Curtis.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
This is the writer C, Curtis.
Oh, hi, Curtis. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
And would you like to comment on the last poem?
Yeah, it was magical. It was surreal. I like the flow. Every line was connected. It married together. And it left you where they were happy. The unknown was a possibility within the whole life. So it left the listeners wanting to know what happened. We want to know more, but I enjoyed it. Great write, great lines.
Thank you, Curtis. I appreciate that. And I'd like to welcome area code 763 to the show. Who's calling, please?
This is Dexter.
Hey, Dexter. How are you?
Pretty good. Glad I could join.
Absolutely. Did you get a chance to hear that last poem?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was a fantastic write, but it also made me really appreciate the writers that we have here on All Poetry. You know, I think of that all the time when I read some of the greats, and that's not even a knock on them. I just think that we have some such fantastic writers here, and it'll never be acknowledged, and I guess we are all okay with that, but I just think that I read such amazing poetry on a nightly basis. I think that this one just even brings that out further.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, Curtis, I have your poem up whenever you're ready.
All right, let me see. So I'm going to put a little jazz and blues behind it. I'm going to take everybody back to maybe the 50s, 60s era, the jazz and blues. Sit back, and I'm going to speak over a little jazz and organ. Here we go. Yeah, it was sad how it happened. My feelings caught me off guard. A little more in sight, I would have played another card. See, I was in too deep. Memories of the past kept depriving me of my sleep. I couldn't rest. It seemed like I was always preparing for a test that I could never pass. A matter of fact, no one could pass. my final grade F. 2 months later, your love had left, fighting not to be a player and hurt you, but unsolved feelings left me exposed with a clue. Reduced down to casual friends, maybe this is how we were scheduled to end. Fill up all your good memories for your stories down a road, and no love can't die, even when we grow old. End poem. End poem.
Beautiful read, and I really like the jazz in the background as well. You know, you capture the essence of the love and the pain of being in love. You know, when you have to pack up your memories for down the road, for stories down the road, and no, love can't die even when we grow old. I mean, you know, that's just a beautiful, beautiful sentiment there.
Thank
well
you.
Done. Absolutely. And Pam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a beautiful write, a wonderful read. I'm glad you were able to call in to read it yourself, because it's always great to hear the poet's work in their own voice. I like how this brings us through memories of love and loss and the hurt, but in the end gives us that sense of hope that, you know, that love, even as we grow older, you know, can't die. And I really liked this all the way through, but especially fighting not to be that player and hurt you, but unsolved feelings left me exposed with a clue, reduced down to casual friends. You know, powerful lines and very well done.
Thank you, thank you.
Great, great comment, Pam, thank you. And Bobby, what did you think?
Strongly emotive. I liked the cadence of it. This spoke to me from a technical point of view. Great cadence, great flow, read beautifully, and a strong, very masterful example of the use of assonance throughout. Guard, card, memory, sleep, test, pass. It's got the vowel sounds in there that just thread together beautifully. So it really is a very masterful write.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
And Dexter, what did you think?
Well, you know, I don't want to speak for the poet, but I definitely felt, you know, the inner city within this. Sometimes when you're in a place where people don't really quite either maybe value or there hasn't been experience of a relationship, a lot of single family, maybe people don't value whatever, but it's like you're trying to break that cycle, but all the women around you kind of are not, and they're kind of part of it. Finding not to be a player, you know, you're letting your guard down. And then you figure out exactly why you had your guard up to begin with. This whole thing just kind of just hits me hard, and I think that this is a great write.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well said. Thank you, Dex. And would you like to say anything about your poem, Curtis?
This is just one that it's like a bluesy things that I saw in life, and when I was writing this, I had to stop and pause a few times because it was like real life events, things that happened, and it was like an emotional piece. So when I sing it or do like stand up, like an open mic on it, the emotions just come out, and especially when I put jazz to it or some blues to it. And it's just one of my favorite pieces.
That's great. Thank you. Okay,
thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling in. And Dexter, you're up next to read.
All right, I got Altered Mind. Gracefully gliding gently across the passing cosmos, free as forgotten words, spiraling into a campfire's eulogy, smiling in the midst of a granted shooting star wish to be finally lost, separated in perfect splendor from you and I, they and them, success and gain, failure and restraint, as the paralyzing bliss of we transforms life's outline into a plummeting waterfall, splashing gallons of uncharted maybes, when suddenly reality's abrupt kiss softly presses my cheek, and the sequences of hidden colors lose electricity, awakening me back in Kansas, where my reasoning begins slowly returning in safe baby steps of obviousness, configuring my focus to the ball of transparent evidence. I throw away the empty bag resting on my lap into the trash. End poem.
Beautiful read, and I really like it. I mean, I like the psychedelic appeal to it. You know, smiling in the midst of a granted shooting star wish to be finally lost, separated in perfect splendor from you and I, they and them, success and gain, failure and restraint, as the paralyzing bliss of we transforms life outline into a plummeting waterfall, splashing gallons of uncharted maybes. I mean, that's fascinating writing. Just very talented. Excellent write, Dexter. A great read as well.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Pam, what are your thoughts? Hello, Pam.
Pam's tripping right now.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I had myself on mute. No, I really enjoyed this, Dexter. You have, you definitely brought us into that altered state of mind. You can tell you had a lot of fun. This is, I like how this almost has a nostalgic feel to it, and a really edgy feel. I like from you and I, they and them, success and gain, failure and restraint, as the paralyzing bliss of we transforms life's outlines in a plummeting waterfall, splashing gallons of uncharted maybes. And I like how that takes a look at how, you know, lines in life are so oftentimes blurred, you know, both on an actual physical level and also on a metaphorical level. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, ma'am, thank you. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
It did have a psychedelic, trippy quality to it. I like it's a flight of fantasy that starts out in the beginning, gracefully gliding gently across the passing cosmos, free as forgotten words, and it takes you through the entire trip. But what I really, really appreciated about this is the last stanza, configuring my focus to the ball of transparent evidence, and I throw the empty bag resting in my lap into the trash. After this flight of fantasy, you're back to reality, and you're throwing a bag away in the trash. The ending is just so... it's anticlimactic, but it's like you're grounded and you've gone on this great balloon ride and now you're back to ground again and you're having to deal with reality again. And in that one stanza, you're reminded that reality has been sitting here waiting for you the whole time.
Thank you, Bobby, for catching that.
And Dexter, would you like to say anything about your poem?
No, I think we still got Duke on here, don't we?
I'm sorry?
No, I don't got anything really quite to say. It was just kind of a trippy poem. Did we lose the guy that just read?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, did we? Oh, okay. No problem. No, yeah. I thought it was a trippy read, and I just thought it was fun. And I appreciate, I think Selena's her name, for inviting me to the contest. So thank you.
Great comment. Thank you, Dexter. Okay, I've got the next poem up, and it's by Frank, a.k.a. Poetic Picasso. And Emmy, are you back?
Yeah, sorry. I got my phone died, and I had to wait for it to charge a bit.
Okay, great. Would you like to speak on Dexter's poem?
Oh, I have it on my screen, but I kind of just got in while you guys were commenting. I didn't get a chance to hear it, but I can probably leave a comment in writing if that works.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not a problem.
Yeah. Okay, I have the next poem up, and this is by Poetic Picasso, aka the other side. But...
Sparrows sing the sad song of the morning sorrow as the gentle winds brush the petals of the weeping blooms, and a deafening eeriness prevails over the silent voices of yesterday, who once had smelled the sweet powdery scent of the blue bonnets. The essence of the innocence of children is lost to memories within the dewdrops of the falling tears, a mournful mother's, and the warm embrace of the somber fathers nearby, for the regret is that they will never hold their children again. Over the lonesome fields of the rose of yellow roam their souls as they open their wings to fly with the monarch butterflies. When the fresh dawn shines its tangerine color brightly above the tincture of wreaths and ribbons placed upon the hollow playground. Fly away, my beautiful cherubs, unto the depth of the cerulean sky, until you reach the moon and twinkle with the wistful stars. Your nocturnal moonbeams glisten with your dancing shadows as you whisper into the soothing breeze. The echoes of your fading breath gone into the hallowed air. Behold, the awakened sunflowers healing the broken hearts of grief. For the day shall bring the sunshine to remember the young faces of children cry. No more, for the storm shall pass, and so shall the rain. In the poem.
Wow, that was a haunting storyline and a beautiful read. But, I mean, this is dedicated to the tragedy in Texas where, you know, Uvalde, Texas, and the children that were killed in that event. Just a tragic story. And I thought he captured the essence of their lives and the lives of their family members quite poignantly and beautifully. Behold the awakened sunflower healing the broken hearts of grief, for today shall bring the sunshine to remember the young faces of children. Just an epic rite and wreath. Bobby, what are your thoughts?
Deeply emotional piece, very mournful, very reverential, too, in that it calls forth the memories of the children that were lost. This is beautifully written, very evocative, very deeply emotional.
Absolutely. Thank you, Bobby. And Dexter, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought that this poem really brings out almost the essence of why religion and spirituality was created, because, you know, something so tragic and something so horrible, it's almost like that can't be the end, you know, which it is the end, but it's like these lonesome field rows of yellow roam their souls. Something so tragic. It's like something has to happen with those kids, because they had so much potential and there is so much possibility there. And I thought he captured that longing for just a hope that there's some type of continuance for those little kids. So very well done.
Great comment, Esther. Thank you. And Emmy, what are your thoughts?
I really like the part about the sort of the weeping flowers and like the petals, because a lot of that is, I mean, it is a very strong personification. And then I thought the imagery for most of the beginnings part were just really strong. I initially sort of thought that this was sort of about grief, because especially with Remember the Young Faces of Children, it's sort of like no longer in life but in memory, kind of like living on. And there's a sort of conviction in that statement, as in like we're not going to forget their faces. We're going to remember that this kind of innocence still exists in the world, you know. So a very sad poem, but very powerful, and it has a much, much more hopeful ending than I would typically expect of a poem like this. So that was definitely nice.
Great comment, Emmy. Thank you. Okay, Bobby, I have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Not at all. And we have our good friend Luke J.R. I do love the way he crafts his titles. Parisian Polaris by Luke J.R. Igloos, isometric view. I'm seeing two. My eyes are deceitful through the frozen wasteland, staring through the darkness engulfed cavern, caring for their smaller creature. I see four eyes. Away from the baby polar bear, it guides me, ready for take a photograph of beauty, frosty, free focus, enriched with cuteness. I'm gazing at the mama bear, death staring towards me. I'm afraid of what awaits. Holding the camera steady, oil frozen over the glaciers, reminding me of what was lost in that dreadful cavern. My camera crew that caught her on tape, it's my heroic cape, rusted, redness soaked into the frosty, icy snow. I'd stand closer if I didn't already know. She may look gentle, attending to her young. When the camera turns on, you will be wrong to assume, as my eyes become faded, hollow, wasted at noon. There's my soul returning to my mother on the very lonely moon. End poem.
Beautiful read, Bobby. And I really liked it. I mean, it's you could picture this bear as it was looking at him, looking at her, gazing, and he's gazing at Mama Bear, death staring towards me. I'm afraid of what awaits. And then holding the camera over oil frozen over the glaciers, reminding me of what was lost in that dreadful cavern. My camera crew that caught her on tape, it's my heroic cape. Redness, rusted redness soaked into the frosty, icy snow. I'd stand closer if I didn't already know. And then, you know, like a mama bear attending to her young looks gentle, but, I mean, there's a power there that you don't want to mess with, and it would end your life, unfortunately. So just a beautiful poem on the subject of a bear and its mama, the mama bear. So great job, Luke. Great read, Bobby. Dexter, what did you think of the read?
Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic read and a fantastic poem. I also liked his titles. His titles definitely kind of bring out your best, bring out the best in your vocab and your sounding out abilities. You know, the write itself, though, is about a topic that is like a photographer, normally you'd be like, you know, kind of taken back and kind of almost in horror that I believe the photographer died. But the fact is that these polar bears and, you know, and some of these species are at such are almost extinct that you can't help but root for the animal and the creature. And, you know, and I think that he covers such a topic that's brilliant, you know, in capturing that, because it's almost not as gruesome or vivid, because you're kind of on the side of the predator, the mama bear, the mama polar bear. You know, the tigers are the same way. You know, it's like they're fading out. So you're kind of rooting for them in a way, whether it's a cameraman or not. So I thought that this was a great write.
Well, Ted, thank you, Dexter. Great comment. And Emmy, what did you think?
Yeah, I was thinking kind of along the same lines. Like, it really does capture that compassion really well. I think there's also just really great lines here, like the cape rusted redness soaked into the frosty, icy snow. I think another line that I thought was nice was, my eyes, you're deceitful through the frozen wasteland. A sort of like a neat way of sort of capturing the feeling of like being in a blizzard or being in colder conditions, where maybe like your hair is like frozen and it's sort of hanging over like your eyes or something. So it can be harder to see, like actually harder to see when you're sort of walking around in like a tundra. Like that, and I think that was a really clever way of explaining it. The same with sort of like frosty, furry focus. It feels like it kind of has like two meanings there, which is definitely very handy. But yeah, great write for sure.
I agree wholeheartedly. Thank you. Okay, I have the next poem up. This is by Zana, and it's called Spaceman, and she has a SoundCloud. So play this.
I am a spaceman, floating off in space, drifting away from this spacecraft. As I go farther, I lost my track of time, of space, of life. The fuel vacuum comes in like a thief, stealing all the air I need. In the vastness alone, I wander aimlessly, while in awe of the beauty of the void. In my eyes, I see how the earth shrinks slowly. Please give another minute.
Picture all this as she speaks that space band floating off in space, drifting away from the spacecraft as I go further. I lost my track of time, of space, of life. The fuel runs out. The vacuum comes in like a thief, stealing all the air that I need. You can picture all that as she reads it, and it was just a fantastic presentation of being lost in space, floating adrift in the vast of the unending cosmos, never knowing where you're going, or, you know, and knowing you'll never get home. So just a beautiful poem, heart-wrenching throughout. What did you think, Bobby?
I kept hearing ground control to Major Tom. It reminded me of the parts of the song, Elton John's song, where he's just the planet Earth is blue and there's nothing I can do, and he's off in the void of space, and he's away from everyone and everything he loves, and this captures that same feeling of not only exploration and awe, but also of the vastness of space and how insignificant, infinitesimal we are when confronted by it. But it echoed the Elton John classic to me, which I think both of them together, beautiful rites.
Yeah, I thought Bobby was very, very on with her right. I also just thought the read of Spaceman, it also got the feel of overall confronting death, which, you know, maybe in many ways might have been from this, but it just, it almost could have served as a metaphor for dying as well, you know, and so I just thought it was a perfect right.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Dexter. And Emmy, what are your thoughts?
I didn't know if it was my it was just my phone and my connection messing up, but like the voice kind of sounded a lot more distorted, which I thought was a really, really cool effect if that was like intentional. It's sort of like it's almost like kind of like reading this journal of someone gradually being lost in space, and as time goes on, like their own ability to communicate sort of loosens and loosens because they're just sort of drifting further and further away from the rest of society. And I think that was probably one of the most effective uses of SoundCloud that I've heard in a while. So I figured I'd sort of talk more about that element. But yeah, a great, great poem.
Absolutely. Thank you, Emmy. Wonderful comments. Okay. Bobby, would you like to say anything about any upcoming shows that you have?
Well, we have a week from today. Your reverse side of your coin. We have Exploring Ekphrasis, and next week we'll be, and I'm desperately bracing toward the looking for my cues here that was not prepared earlier. Next week is going to be the Renaissance Realm of Olga Suvorova. She's third generation Russian artist, and if you've not looked at the artwork for this contest, it will knock your socks off. It is so detail oriented and color rich, and it is so beautifully rendered and very romantic. But what's really interesting is if you look at the artwork, some of the contributions that we've gotten for the contest are really, really imaginative. I mean, they've taken this artwork in directions that I never would have anticipated. So I'm really excited about reading it next week. Some of these are just, I read the stuff and I go, wow, I never saw that in any of this stuff. As a matter of fact, I'm trying to write a couple of pieces myself just because I'm just so captured by her artwork. And then, of course, this coming week, probably tomorrow, I'll be opening up our next contest. And the artist for that is as unlike Olga as he could possibly be. It's going to be Alexander Sverdov, there we go. Too many consonants. Anyway, very dark imagery, very haunting imagery, great work to look at and to let your imagination take off. So next weekend is going to be Olga, and then you're going to have a new contest coming up probably tomorrow or the next day. So anyway, people seem to be really enjoying the artwork and being introduced to different artists, and I'm so glad because there's so many tremendous artists out there, and I'm so happy to be able to share them with everyone.
Excellent. Thank you, Bobby, for sharing. Okay, everybody, have a great night. Thank you for calling in. Oh, sorry. Would you like to say something?
May I cut in briefly?
Yes.
I was just, while we were sort of on the topic of contests, I actually started a contest on my own, which was devoted mostly to exploring artists on Instagram. I linked several artists in the actual description. I can also link that in the Late Night Poets chat if you want. But definitely big on like writing poetry inspired by art. That's always a nice thing.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing, Emmy. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful night, and we'll talk to you again soon. Much love, everybody.
Ciao a tutti.
Buenas noches.